Today is December the 1st, 2021, Wednesday evening. This is on the life of Samuel. We had finished chapter 12 concerning Samuel and the things that were done there, concerning his appeal to the people, that he had not done anything, and he did not do anything, or they could not accuse him of anything. The plan that God had set, that Samuel was a judge, was working fine. And God was pleased with that. And the people should have been pleased with it also, since, you know, Samuel said, I'm innocent. You're witness of me. The king is witness to me also that he hadn't done anything. And the people agreed. And so it was the people that wanted the change, not because God's plan wasn't working. Samuel was a good judge for them, and it wasn't because of him, but the people just wanted to be like the other nations around them. We saw that Saul, his place where he stayed at was Gibeah. That was his town that he was from. And that's where he made his home in chapter 10 and verse 26. And that was going to be the capital of his kingdom, was going to be Gibeah. We need to recognize the significance in chapter 7. That in verses 15 and 16, that Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life. So all his days he pronounced judgment, he made judgment calls, and it was from a circuit in verse 16 that he went from year to year on a circuit to Bethel, Gilgal, and Mizpah. And he judged Israel in all those places. There was significance to those places, and so we need to remember that those places were a religious significance as far as that's where Samuel went. It doesn't mean that he went, when it says from year to year, it doesn't mean that he just went once a year. There was set times that he would show up, that he would hold and be able to make judgments. You couldn't ask two people that if they had a problem to sit there and wait a year until Samuel came. So there was a set pattern, a circuit that he went on, that he would go to these places and that he would make judgments and he would judge Israel with it and also to do teaching and so forth from them. So that would have been a religious center, more or less for a term, that Gilgal was important, that if anything was taking place or going on, we'll see that they went to Gilgal. Saul went to Gilgal with Samuel for them to coronate him and to make him king. We saw that in a chapter or two back last time, that that's where Samuel said, let's go to Gilgal and let's restore the kingdom back to Israel. So that took place at Gilgal. We'll see the same thing happen today in the lesson this evening on chapter 13, where we start looking at the situation that Saul runs into. We find in 13 and verse 1 that he had reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, so some time has passed. You're looking at 1 year, 2 years that Saul has reigned, and the time has passed, and he chose for himself, he had 3,000 men for himself, 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash in the mountains of Bethel in 13:2, and 1,000 were with Jonathan, his son, in Gibeah, Benjamin. And the rest of the people he sent away, every man to his tent. So we see here that something happens. And when something happens, it places Saul in a dilemma. He doesn't know what to do. Jonathan reaches out to the garrison of the Philistines in Geba, and he attacks that small garrison there of the Philistines, and he defeats them. And so, naturally, Saul isn't involved in that, and since Jonathan did it, it aggravates the Philistines, that the main course of the Philistines get upset, and they come and gather themselves together in verse 5 against Saul. And Saul and the people, they call together, and they go to Gilgal because of this happening. And, of course, the significance, Saul didn't go to Gibeah, his home city, but he went to Gilgal. And most likely he went there waiting for Samuel to show up, which we find out later on that he was waiting for Samuel. But the Philistines are coming together against Israel now to fight against them because of this incursion that Jonathan made on the small garrison there at Gibeah and defeated them. and Israel became an abomination to the Philistines. And in verse 5, consider the strength. The Philistines gathered together to fight with Israel. And with that, there is 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and the people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. Now consider the force that the Philistines had. And you're looking at maybe 2,000, 3,000 people that were there that Saul had with him, that Jonathan had. And you're looking now that there's 30,000 gathered together in chariots. And then you've got the 6,000 horsemen and then people that was a big multitude as the sand. Scripture doesn't even number them. And so this is the situation that Saul's facing. And they come up to Michmash and they're going to fight Israel. And here's what happened. There's three things. And even though he's been a year, 2 years, the devil has took opportunity. And he's attacking the leadership. And that's exactly what he's doing. He's going after the people. He's going after Saul. The men of Israel, verse 6, when they saw the danger, they become distressed. They become scared. They become afraid. They become frightened. And so what happens, the people take off on him. They leave Saul high and dry. They run to caves, thickets, wherever they could hide, in rocks, holes, pits, whatever. They saw this force and they become alarmed and they just took off. And so now here's Saul by himself, basically. When you look down at the other person in verse 15, the ones that were left with Saul, the people that were with him, about 600 men. So that's a far cry from the 3,000 and the 2,000 that they had in their company. Now you're down to 600, and all the people took off on him. So he's there, he sees that, they're scattered. And so some of the people go over to the Jordan, and they go, I mean, that's quite a distance, go over to Gad and Gilead. And Saul, he was still in Gilgal, and all the people followed after him, trembling, that were with him. And so he's there waiting on Samuel, and Samuel doesn't show. And so here's Saul with this predicament. I've got the people that deserted me. They've left me. I got the Philistines that have come out in great force against me. What do I do? Samuel, you're not here to help me. You're not here to guide me. What do I do? And so he's going to inquire of the Lord. Possibly the Lord can tell him, you know, are the Philistines going to come down to Gilgal against him? And so he proceeds to go to the Lord under good intentions. And he starts doing the sacrifice, which is not his responsibility. That belonged to Samuel. That belonged to the priest. But Saul's going to break out because he's in this great bind of what he sees. And he's overwhelmed with it. And so he says, bring a burnt offering and a peace offering here. And he offered the burnt offering. The one thing that you can see is that what the devil has done to Saul is, I think of the passage in the New Testament, do not walk by sight, but walk by faith. The devil attacks from the standpoint that when we see something and we're overwhelmed with it, that's what we concentrate on. And we go by our sight. And that's what Saul went by. The dilemma he was in. The people left him. Here's this big army. There's no way that I can overcome it. There's just no, you know. And so he let his sight overrule on him on what he saw. But at least he said, I'm going to at least go and try to approach God and see if they're going to come down here to Gilgal against me. But before Samuel shows up, and as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him, and he greeted him. And of course, Samuel says, Saul, what have you done? And Saul said, here's his reasoning. Number one, I saw that the people were scattered from me. I didn't have nobody standing with me. There was nobody there. The people were leaving me right and left. They've gone. And Samuel, you didn't show up within the time that you said that you would be here. And not only that, but the Philistines were great who gathered against me. They were so great, I didn't know what to do. And they're here at Michmash, and I said, the Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. He had good intentions. He needed to make supplication to the Lord, he felt. But that wasn't his responsibility. And it's interesting, he says in verse 12, the sight that ran him, the things that he saw that dictated his actions and movements, was what compelled him to do. He said, therefore I felt compelled and offered a burnt offering. He felt compelled. And Samuel said, Saul, you've done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. That was not Saul's place. He was going to make supplication to the Lord. Seemed like that was the right thing to do, but it wasn't his place to do it. Now, just the same as David had inquired of the Lord many times without doing the sacrifices and so forth, could Saul not have done the same thing? Nothing said that Saul couldn't inquire of the Lord. It's how he went about and how he did it that he done foolishly in offering the peace offering and the burnt offering, which belonged to Samuel, the priest, to do and not to Saul, the king. Saul could have inquired of the Lord. David inquired sometimes with the ephod that had the Urim and Thurim on it for an answer. Will they come down? Will they not come down? Will this happen? Will that happen? Saul could have done the same thing, but he didn't. But we see here the advantage that Satan took of him, that here he's confronted with this situation, and what do I do? And he just made the wrong move. And Satan just slipped it in there on him. You know, here he's faced with this. I got to do something. I'm in a panic. And the people are in a panic. And Saul's left on his own. And that's what he does. And Samuel tells him, you've not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But that's not the case. He said, now your kingdom shall not continue. You've not kept the commandment. You haven't done it. So here's the consequences of your actions, Samuel. Your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has chosen another man after the Lord's heart. And the Lord has commanded this other to be over the people. Think about it. That's kind of a hard blow for Saul. He'd just been a couple years. And now, you know, you're going to lose it. The Lord sought somebody else for himself, a man after his own heart. And he's going to command him to be commander over the people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. And so, that's basically telling Saul, Samuel is, that, you know, your reign as king is going to come to an end. God's already going to give it to somebody else. And Samuel arose and went up from Gilgal to Gibeah. And Saul numbered the people. And they set about that now they're going to end up having a conflict. During this time, the rest of chapter 13, you'll see that there wasn't many weapons because there wasn't a blacksmith around. The Philistines had made sure of that. They went out in little companies and attacked Israel. And there wasn't a blacksmith. And the only weapons that was to be found was the ones that Saul and Jonathan had. And, you know, so then in chapter 14, which really Samuel does not come into play in chapter 14. The Lord works through Jonathan. You know, Saul made a rash oath. And that oath was, you know, nobody's going to eat anything. Don't touch a bit of food until we defeat these Philistines. And so, therefore, all the people say, okay, well, they go out and they defeat and everything else. And then Jonathan is successful. And then he's weary. And there's some honey. He gets into the honey. He tastes it. And the Lord holds off on Israel because of that. And And so Saul is like, okay, now who transgressed? And even if it is my son, you know, the sentence is out there. They're going to die. And the lots fell upon Saul. Then they fell upon Jonathan. And the only thing that saved Jonathan at that time was the people. The people said, no, we're not going to do that to Jonathan. We're not going to let him die on the rash oath. So the situation that happened was the people were so hungry that it's interesting over in Acts, one of the things that they were to keep from when they wrote the letter from the Council of Jerusalem was that they should keep from things strangled from blood. You get some of this here in chapter 14, verses 31 through 34, of where when they had driven back the Philistines that day from Michmash to Ajalon, so the people were very faint, and the people rushed on the spoil. They took sheep, oxen, calves, and slaughtered them on the ground. And the people ate them with the blood. They were slaughtered, they ate them with the blood. There wasn't, the strangulation from the standpoint that you let the blood and let it out. And they told Saul, saying, look, the people are sinning against the Lord by eating with the blood. And so he said, you have dealt treacherously. Roll a large stone to me this day. And Saul said, disperse yourselves among the people and say to them, bring me here every man's ox and every man's sheep. Slaughter them here and eat. And do not sin against the Lord by eating with the blood. So every one of the people brought his ox with him that night and slaughtered it there. So that's where you have an example of them eating with the blood. That is what the council at Jerusalem said. This is one of the things we're telling the people to keep from doing. Don't eat things with the blood. Saul is kind of in and out. He's in a dilemma here. He breaks the commandment of God. But yet here in this, he brings the people and stands for the commandment of God. And tells the people, no, you can't sin. Don't do that. And he tries to rectify them and does in the slaughtering of the animals and so forth and the letting of the blood. So Saul is, he's one way and then he's the other. So I can't say, but then finally, in the end, we know with David, he really has an evil spirit with him. Because he tries out of anger, out of, I'm not going to say jealousy, but out of resentment, that David is going to take over the kingdom, that he's angered by it and he wants to destroy David. So there's a complete change that we can see from Saul through this time period that he goes through on that. So that's what happens that after his rash oath and so forth. And he continues to have wars. And there was verse 52 of chapter 14. There was fierce war with the Philistines all the days of Saul. So he had those battles day in and day out with him, with Israel. Of course, that's what he was appointed for. Samuel said, that's why, you know, God has chosen you. You're going to be the king. You're going to help my people against the Philistines. And that's what Saul did. Saul has another encounter that we see in chapter 15. Samuel reminds Saul that the Lord sent me to anoint you king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore, heed the voice of the words of the Lord. Be sure and heed the words. You've already messed up. You know, the Lord's not happy. But now heed the words. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he ambushed him on the way when he came up from Egypt. Samuel gives charge to Saul that he needs to go and to punish Amalek for what they did to Israel. When you look back at Exodus, the 17th chapter, it's interesting to note, and it would be a good study to go through and see. At certain times, God allowed people in what they did to live. Even though that they were evil and did wrong, He allowed them to live. And other people, He didn't allow to live. You had the three, Korah, Dothan, and them that rebelled against Moses and Aaron. And the Lord told the camp in Israel, you move away from them. away from them, and the earth opened up and swallowed them, and they didn't have a chance. They were gone. Achan didn't have a chance. He was gone. But other people did. And it would be a good study on what exactly did they do to cause the Lord that his long suffering ended, that he didn't show long suffering toward them. And the Amalekites is one of them. God wanted them totally, utterly destroyed. Kids, everybody, totally, utterly destroyed. In this verse 8 of chapter 17 of Exodus, now Amalek came and fought with Israel and Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, choose out some men and go fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. You know that fight takes place, that they shore up Moses' hand, and when they do, Israel prevails when his arm goes down. Amalek prevails and so forth. And when it all is done, Joshua defeats Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. He just defeats them. Then the Lord said to Moses in verse 14, write this for memorial in the book and recount it in the hearing of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. They attack. We find out that they attack from the rear. For he said, the Lord has sworn, the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation, in verse 16, but he's going to utterly wipe them out. When you look at Numbers chapter 24, Numbers chapter 24, verse 20, when you look at Balaam's prophecies that he was giving, then he looked on Amalek and he took up his oracle and said, Amalek was first among the nations, but shall be last until he perishes. So the prophecy is here, that Balaam's prophecy is that Amalek is going to perish. In Deuteronomy, the 25th chapter, in verse 17, the instruction is given to Israel, don't forget this. Do not forget this. Always remember it. Remember what Amalek did to you on the way as you were coming out of Egypt. How he met you on the way and attacked your rear ranks. All the stragglers at your rear when you were tired and weary, and he did not fear God. Therefore it shall be, when the Lord your God has given you rest from your enemies all around in the land which the Lord your God has given you to possess as an inheritance, that you will blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. You shall not forget. All this time now, Amalek is still continuing on, but now it turns to Saul. Saul, this is your charge now. God has said they're going to be utterly destroyed. This is your charge now. Chapter 15 of 1 Samuel, verse 3. Samuel tells him, now go and attack Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have. Utterly destroy. Do not spare them, but kill both man, woman, infant, nursing child, ox, sheep, camel, donkey, everything. Kill everything. Utterly destroy. Utterly destroyed, that nothing remains. So Saul gathers 200,000 foot soldiers and 10,000 men of Judah, and he proceeds to battle against Amalek. He goes out and he battles against them. And in here you see the niceness of Saul is that the Kenites were there around Amalek, and Saul says to the Kenites, you move, you get gone. I'm going to come in and I'm going to attack the Amalekites. I'm going to kill them and I'm going to utterly destroy them, and I don't want you to be destroyed with them. For you showed kindness, he says, to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt. That's what the Kenites did. And so Saul spares them and tells them, you know, to leave. And so they leave. So Saul's intent was to utterly destroy the Amalekites. And so he attacks them. And verse 8, he also took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive. And he utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. Well, he utterly destroys them with the sword. They attack. They utterly destroy the people except Agag. He brings Agag back. Saul and the people spared Agag, and they also spared the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and were unwilling to utterly destroy them. But everything despised and worthless, that they utterly destroyed. Saul and the people spared Agag. They spared the best of the sheep, the best of the oxen, the fatlings, the best of the lambs, and all that was good. And his intention and their intention was good. It was a good intention. And they stated that Saul and the people were unwilling to utterly destroy the good and best. However, they were willing to destroy everything that was despised, everything that was worthless. That they utterly destroyed. And the pretense that they saved all this was, we're going to offer it to God. We're going to offer it to the Lord. And you wouldn't want to give the Lord anything despised or worthless, but the best of everything, surely the Lord would be pleased with that. They're so used to giving sacrifices before that He ought to be pleased with that. Well, Samuel shows up. Samuel rose up. He went. Samuel went to find Saul because God had came to him. And God told Samuel, I greatly regret that I set up Saul as king. To think that the Lord coming to Samuel and relaying a message concerning that he greatly regretted having set up Saul as king. The King James uses the word repentant. Strong's defines the word to mean to be sorry in an unfavorable sense. The Lord exhibits new actions when man changed to make wrong choices, and the Lord is taking a different course of purpose and action due to Saul's disobedience. Saul has disappointed him. And so he's regretted that he's made him king, for he has turned back from following me and has not performed my commandments. The effect that it had on Samuel was that Samuel grieved and he cried out to the Lord all night. And to think about that, that's such a grief of heart to Samuel that Saul had turned again and that the Lord came to him and said, this is how it is. He's not performing my commandments, and therefore, you know, I'm sorry that I made him king. This is how the Lord felt, and this was going to be the Lord's action. And it was so great upon Samuel that he was severely grieved. He wept, he cried out to the Lord all night. Have you ever had something happen like that? Have you ever had something that grieved you so hard and strong about either a situation or something that has happened that was against what the Lord wanted or whatever, or the people that did it or whatever, or the person that did it, that you were grieved all night or you just troubled with it? This was the situation Samuel was in. Samuel continued to mourn for Saul and on his behalf because the Lord rejected that Saul was made king over Israel. When you look at verse 35, it was something that he couldn't get over. And Samuel went no more to see Saul until the day of his death. Nevertheless, Samuel mourned for Saul, and the Lord regretted that he had made Saul king over Israel. The regret was there. So Samuel, he's got a bad message that he has to take to Saul. And that's where we'll pick up next week. Chapter 15. We'll have about a couple more lessons on Samuel, and that will be about it, because that's all that's going to be contained with the life of Samuel. We'll about have covered everything. So after about a couple weeks, it'll be ready for someone else to take over the Wednesday night class. So any question or comment? Okay, thank you.